Today is about bold leadership and smart choices. The smartest choice for better sleep is right here at Mountain Mattress Company. Save on Tempur-Pedic for adaptive body-hugging comfort, Stearns & Foster for luxurious heirloom quality feel so you wake up ready to lead the day. Plus, explore a full lineup of adjustable bases. They're the perfect upgrade to customize your comfort. Make it easy with convenient financing options available to fit your budget. Lead the charge to legendary rest. Visit Mountain Mattress Company today and claim your victory with great sleep. This President's Day event ends February 24th. Don't wait. Seize the moment.
I'm here with Candace Kindred from Teriyaki Madness. Long days are cold and dinner decisions feel harder than they should.
Tommy, hi. So warm things up with Teriyaki Madness. Come check out our best-selling orange chicken tossed hot in the wok and served over warm noodles. And if you want more heat, make it spicy. It's real made-to-order comfort food that warms you from the inside out.
And you don't even have to go out in the cold.
Now with Mad Dash, order on the Teriyaki Madness app, select Mad Dash, and pull up front. We'll run the food right out to your car. Stay warm and keep those kids buckled.
Turn up the heat with Teriyaki Madness.
When it comes to Wyoming, your roof takes the hits. Hail, wind, snow, and sun. That's why Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors installs metal roofing built to last. From commercial grade R panel, residential metal roofs, and our impact resistant 24 gauge standing seam systems, every option is engineered for strength, longevity, and performance. When you want protection that lasts a lifetime, call Brandon 307 for your free inspection. Quality materials, quality installation, local experience you can count on. Visit Brandon307.com. Brandon 307, branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Wednesday, February 4th. From the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we are joined by the Sheridan Police Department Chief, Travis Koltiska, and the Captain, Tom Ringley. Good morning, and welcome back, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hi, Floyd.
Now, how are things down at the department, Chief?
Things are great. We have two officers that are currently in training that we've recently hired. They were sworn in on the third week in February. Officer Trevor Simon and Officer Christian Haley. So they're well into their FTO training program. And so that's exciting news. A couple of great additions. And Officer Bailey Moss is currently at the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy getting his Peace Officer Basic Certification.
Fantastic.
So great news on those fronts. So these are some outstanding individuals, and we're very fortunate to have them as members of our department. And so that's a great step moving forward. Things as far as, you know, call volume or kind of status quo, other than, knock on wood, fewer crashes, but
I was gonna ask. Yeah.
It's dry roads, so we are kind of hoping for some snow at some point, but we'll take the lack of collisions in exchange for that. But yeah, we need some moisture, but no, overall things are great.
Chief, how many positions are open right now with the addition of our newest officers?
There are still four positions open.
Okay.
In the patrol ranks, and we have one dispatch position open. We also have a CSO, a community service officer, for those that I know our CSOs have been in here before and spoken with you, but their, you know, primary responsibilities are animal control calls, calls for service involving whether it's dog at large, animal neglect, those sort of calls that specifically focus on animals. That's a large bulk of their job, but they also do some parking abandoned vehicles and some like grass or shrub violations, stuff like that. So we have one of those positions open right now as well. So we're looking to hire a great individual to enter into that position as well. It's a non-sworn position, but they are considered specially municipal officers, which allows them to enforce certain city code violations. So they can issue citations for animals or for code violations and stuff like that.
Okay. And I was really thought that was a fantastic position. I mean, it's very involved in the community itself.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of education that goes along with that job. Probably more so, I'd say, even in sworn officers, a lot of education, especially when it comes to animal care and stuff like that, and helping the people make sure that their animals are taken care of, are secured, what the laws are regarding leashes and open areas and stuff like that. So there's a lot of education involved in that.
And we had some great CSOs.
We did. Chris and Ed were fantastic.
A lot to live up to on that, but it is a great position, folks. If you like being out, you like being part of the community, you like helping animals, That is a fantastic position for you to jump in on. But as the chief did say, you've got to know your city ordinances. So there is some study that comes along with that.
We'll teach it.
There you go. You'll get instruction right there. Okay, now, traffic stops, often the most visible and most discussed form of law enforcement among the public. Captain, do you have theories as to why it's the most discussed form of law enforcement?
Yeah. Traffic stops are oftentimes the only contact people have with law enforcement in general. I mean, I often say that we arrest the same six people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of our community don't have any contact with us. They see us out and about conducting high visibility and traffic enforcement or going to point A to B. But in regards to actually having person-to-person contact, it's usually on a traffic stop for most people. So the only imprinted impression people have of us is from a traffic stop.
Yeah. I imagine the officers out there really understand that as well. You are the contact that the majority of the public is going to be having with our law enforcement.
Absolutely. And also people can get pretty touchy if they get receive a citation.
Yeah.
What they need to realize is none of this is personal. I have, even when we were out on patrol, I would had the foggiest who I'd stop or who I'd cited. This from the sheer numbers. We're not going to remember. And also, it also means I was objective.
Mm-hmm.
We apply an equal objective standard to everything, to include traffic enforcement.
There was always a rumor in the 90s and into the 2000s, people talking about how don't buy a red car.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with it. Also, people, and we get into the demographics of people that receive citations later, we cannot see, especially at night, who's driving a car.
Yeah.
And rarely at day, especially if we're it's for a speeding violation. We notice the speed visually. So when the car's so far off that we just can't recognize anyone. But people need to realize it can be uncomfortable. But that's what we're here for. And mm-hmm. we expect our officers to make, if at a bare minimum, the most professional contact possible.
Now, how does the SPD define its goal of voluntary compliance with traffic laws?
Well, like compliance with all laws is education. That's one of the reasons we're here now. That's one of the reasons we put our weekly activity summary on our Facebook account. But we would much rather educate our way out of any problem rather than arrest our way. There's a great comment from years ago when Montana had their meth initiative, and their philosophy was you can't arrest your way out of a problem. That's negative reinforcement. We would rather educate people, let people know about the laws, and remind them that speed limits exist and traffic rules and laws exist. That's why we issue such a small percentage of citations to traffic stops. Roughly 25% of our traffic stops result in a citation.
Wow.
All the rest are, almost all of the rest are written warnings, and a small percentage of verbal warnings.
You know, and on that education piece, you know, I'll remind the public that the police department does host a monthly traffic safety school. That is in 8 hours. It's the first Monday and Tuesday of the first 2 weeks of each month. Well, not each month, because there may be a break in there. For like July is probably going to be a little busy for that and some of those other months. But for voluntary compliance is to lack of crashes, because crashes are detrimental to our community. And people don't realize it. It's not only is it on the low end, you're talking about property damage, right? You're talking about people having to pay money to get a vehicle fixed. That's their only mode of transportation to and from work, their only source of income. So that's the lower level of one of the things we want. If laws, speed limits, turning laws, all of that are in place as safety measures.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we have a lower level of crashes and collisions, then we know we're getting voluntary compliance with most traffic safety laws. On the upper end of that, injuries are devastating. And this community has experienced many of those over the years in our time here at this police department. And so, you know, really moving into that, we don't want people hurt. And so if somebody's driving recklessly, which is a willful and wanton disregard for safety, or even in a careless manner, they're just being, not really using their brain at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Those issues need addressed. But the traffic safety school is a way to also further explain that to people who attend. Here's really why we're doing it, and here's how poor driving can contribute to an unsafe community or a community that can really suffer a measurable loss.
Chief, do you often see parents and their kids coming up to a driving age within that traffic safety school? I mean, you don't have to be told to attend that, right? You can volunteer to attend that?
Yeah, you can sign up. You can volunteer, call down to the police department and sign up for it. Many of our attendees are honestly coming out of the court system where there may be a juvenile who's violated a traffic law for the first time. It's given them a second opportunity to, like, hey, take this class, get a little education. We can work with you on your citation. That's all handled through the courts. The courts can sentence a juvenile. It's all if they're willing to do so. I mean, they can tell the judge, no, I'd just soon pay the fine. I'd shake my head
Yeah.
As a parent, I'd be like, no, you're not. You're going to the traffic.
Yeah.
You're going to the traffic school. So it's both ways. But people can make it. Yeah. If somebody has a kid that's about to start driving, call down, sign up. Parents, sit in there with us. Take the class with us. And take the class with your kid. And it's a great class. It's a great opportunity for us to educate our community.
One thing that I've kind of noticed even about myself, we tend to take driving for granted. One thing that I do remember, a lot of individuals, when I was kind of coming to that age, always used to tell me, remember, it is a privilege, not a right, and that you're on the road and you have this license and you can drive. And sometimes it just becomes so routine, you tend to kind of forget what you're doing. And that's a very, broad statement there. But it's not as if you forget the laws. It almost becomes like second nature. But being within that routine and taking it for granted that you're driving around this multiple thousand-pound vehicle and you can hurt somebody, I mean, it happens.
Yeah, fortunately it does.
And sometimes you just need a little bit of a reminder, maybe even a refresher on some of the traffic laws. I think this traffic safety school is actually a fantastic way to do that, even for yourself. Now, let's talk about the difference between a citation and an official warning.
Sure. A citation is a charge one has to answer either in municipal court or circuit court, depending on whether or not it's a violation of city ordinance or state statute. One thing people always ask me on a traffic stop is how will this affect my license? I don't know. We don't keep track of the points.
Mm.
In regards to one working the way towards a suspension, but a traffic or citation is a summons to either appear in court or forfeit a certain amount for bond. A written warning or even a verbal warning, there's documentation that, hey, we've talked to this person about whatever ordinance or statute they're violating. It hadn't risen quite to the point of a citation, but it's documented. So if that person stopped again for the same reason, an officer, this guy got a written warning for speeding. He's aware of the speed limit because we know an officer has discussed it with him.
Mm.
So therefore, even the same speed may result in a citation. One of the urban myths is, he stopped people. I thought you gave us 9 over or whatever. The speed limits in town is generally 30. 30 means 30.
Not 35.
Right. Correct. So it's just a documentation that we've discussed it. Also, the other reason we require some type of paperwork on all traffic stops is to stop the fishing expeditions to where an officer just wants to stop it. It hasn't happened, but we're preventing that. I just want to look in the car. It's usually not worth the while if they have to produce some type of documentation for it.
Understood. Okay, so it's also it works for the community,
yeah,
in multiple ways.
Yeah, it's just to ensure equal enforcement.
Yep.
and of the road rules of the road.
That I did
not
know.
And that hadn't been an issue, but it's a a pre-preventive measure.
The lock on the gate, keeping honest people honest, yep. Right? All right, on that, I do have to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have more with the SPD right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Some images are forever sketched into our memories. We don't have to see them to remember. Like when President Trump came down the escalator and said, "Make America great again." Or when he raised his fist in Butler, Pennsylvania and said, "Fight, fight, fight." We also don't need to see Liz Cheney's face to remember she betrayed President Trump. But we all know Wyoming can never give our congressional seat to a rhino again. Reed Raisner is an America First conservative who has President Trump's back. A fourth-generation Wyomingite, a businessman, an outsider with the guts to fight. Reed Raisner will protect our Second Amendment rights, deport criminal illegal aliens, and stop liberal politicians, lobbyists, and foreign countries from ripping us off. Liz Cheney is the face of betrayal. Reed Raisner will represent the beating heart of our America First movement.
I'm Reed Raisner, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Reed Raisner for Wyoming.
Before there was a Frackleton's restaurant, this building was home to Dr. Frackleton, the sagebrush dentist who patched up cowboys, Native American chiefs, and anybody tough enough to sit still. No frills, no shortcuts, just steady hands and work done right. That same Frackleton spirit lives on today. Good food prepared with care, well-poured drinks, friendly service, and world-class cuisine. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan.
Your car does a lot for you, getting you to work, hauling kids, driving in Wyoming weather. So when it needs service, trust the experts at Midas. Midas repairs brakes, battery, exhaust, steering, air conditioner, radiator, suspension, starters, charging system, fluids, tires. Midas does it all, and they do it right. Right now, the savings are strong. Buy one oil change, get one free to use by March. Plus, save $100 on a set of four tires. For full service auto repair, see Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan. A touch above the rest.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with the Sheridan Police Department Chief, Travis Koltiska, and Captain of the Force, Tom Ringley. And we are also talking about traffic stops and the numbers from 2025. So, Captain, how many traffic stops did the SPD conduct in 2025? Now, when we say this number, this is accumulative. This is warnings. This is citations.
That's correct. For the past year, we made 5,635 traffic stops, which is down a little bit from the 2022 through 24 average of 5,994, which could account for a lot of things, weather, icy roads, people slowing down. We also have a few fewer officers actually on the street. We have more in training right now. And as we did throughout the 2025. But generally, it's about the same. And that number is significant. That's a lot of stops. That's 5,600 contacts that we have with people that not be pleased that they've been stopped. And in 2025, from those 5,635 traffic stops, 30% resulted in written citations. So that's roughly at the 25% that I mentioned. 67% received written warnings. The remainder, remaining 3% received the verbal warnings. What's also interesting is 25% of all of our arrests involve traffic stops. So a lot of those are DUIs. A lot or driving under suspensions, second and higher offense. And
warrant arrest would probably be warrant.
Yep, and a lot of them arrest on warrants.
So an average traffic stop, you can discover, hey, this guy's got a warrant, he's got to go to jail, or they're driving on a suspended license.
Or they're under the influence, or they've got prohibited substances in their vehicle, yeah.
And this is something that you brought up before, Chief. You know, when it comes to what people may feel, and I'm not saying all the public, I'm saying there's a percentage. Boy, there's too many officers out there doing traffic stops. But there's a huge majority of crime that is prevented through these simple traffic stops, because you see a car commit a simple violation, so the officer takes action and then discovers a lot more once they get up there.
Not only that, but I mean the overall purpose, one of the overall purposes of our presence in any situation is to deter future crime. So think, I don't think anybody out there listening could say, oh, I saw the red and blue lights of a vehicle pulled over and I decided to speed up at that moment. No, what's everybody do when they see those lights? They slow down, regardless of whether they're speeding or not. So, you know, we have been practicing something called DDACS, which is data-driven approaches to crime and traffic safety. We've been practicing that for quite a few years. And what that is the assignment of high visibility enforcement during peak times, dates and hours, when most of our crashes occur that also overlap with crimes that occur and in specific areas. So we evaluate where these things are happening, the time of day, the day of the week, and we encourage and expect our officers that are out there in their unallocated time when they're not responding to calls, because that's another factor on the number of traffic stops is fewer numbers of officers. They're responding to calls for service, so they're not able to do proactive patrols, but it's to act as a deterrent. People who go to commit crimes often do so by traveling in a vehicle. And if we can deter them from that criminal activity that they're going to participate in or on their en route to participate in, just by seeing a police officer, by seeing a car, by seeing a traffic stop, that's also part of the deterrent that we look for.
Maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Not a good time. Not a good idea. I changed my mind. I'm not gonna go about committing this criminal act today.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's an encouragement to make traffic safety is a major priority of the Sheridan Police Department. And so making sure that people abide by those traffic laws. That's the other reason. Prevent those crashes, prevent the property damage, prevent the injuries.
And Chief, on that, using that information, is there a form or a map that you sit down with and you're like, holy cow, look at that. We've got a lot of left-hand turns right here that shouldn't be going on, or there's a lot of this happening over here. Do you consult with YDOT on those types of things?
Our internal report management system allows us to do that. It allows us to create heat maps, and heat maps show trends towards where crashes and crimes are intersecting, when they're on the increase or the decrease. So we can look at hotspots, essentially. It's hotspot policing. We can look at hotspots, and we can assign unallocated high visibility enforcement to that general area at that general time when it's occurring and try to have an impact on those stats. But we use our own internal, because most of the stuff in the city, the Sheridan Police Department is handling anyway, all the crashes that are in there. So, yeah, we send it on to YDOT. It'd be duplicative to reach out to YDOT for the information. We have complete access to it the entire time.
Fantastic. And they can make determinations on whether a light needs to be in place, a stop sign or something like that. I've spoken with Laura Dallas quite frequently about upcoming changes to some of the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Sheridan. I was just wondering the impact that you had on those decisions. If you were able to consult with her and say, look, we could really use one.
We meet, actually, after every public pulse, we meet with Public Works, Director Mercer, and City Engineer Tom Morneau, and that's the very topic that we discuss. It's called the street meeting. So they relay our concerns up to YDOT, because they speak the same language.
Yeah.
they interpret for us.
But I have had direct conversations with YDOT engineers and Laura, and it's common. They do reach out. They're great partners with the city of Sheridan, reaching out to the city and encouraging that public comment, encouraging participation from not only law enforcement, but also specifically from Public Works. Yeah, and so it is something that we work jointly together, because even though it may be a YDOT owned road, it's still in the city limits, and so they like us to have input.
That's fantastic to hear, actually. I think that's really good. Now, afternoon hours. How are afternoon hours tied to crash data and overnight hours tied to our DUI arrests?
Most of our DUI arrests occur from midnight to 3 a.m.
So, wow, really? So that late?
As an example of data-driven enforcement, that's where officers are on the main routes for DUI. I mean, people in town know where most of the crashes are. I'm sure it's the caffeine from Brundage to Burkitt in Maine, also on Fifth Street and on Main Street. The main arteries, of course, have the most accidents. We narrow it down to a several block area. Same for our officers know where the DUIs are, how people get home. But most of our DUIs are between those hours. Most of our accidents, which are crashes, take place between noon and 4 p.m.
Wow.
And of course that contains the lunch rush all the way to school getting out.
Yeah.
So our officers know, probably Fifth Street, Fifth and Main, Main Street, once again, Coffeen.
Before you sent me this information, if you would have asked me the question of when do most crashes happen, I would have guessed in the mornings.
Oh, don't get me wrong. They happen all the time. I mean, there's no hour that they don't happen at. But, you know, traditionally, you know, the majority, and I'd say it's like a high percentage of our crashes occur between those times. For whatever reason that may be, like Captain alluded to, you know, that lunch rush. There's more traffic at that time. And when there's more traffic during those hours, it's unfortunately likely to result in more crashes.
I will say there is a certain time period where I do not like to go for lunch. That's just too dang busy out. I figure it's going to take longer than
people
usual.
People feel hurried and mm-hmm. maybe stop paying attention or just trying to push it a little bit. And, and you know, that's why I always emphasize these are crashes. They're not accidents.
Yeah.
They're preventable.
Yes.
That's a great way to look at it. Not an accident. This is a crash.
Yeah. I would have a hard time other than maybe a deer jumping out of jumping out of a ditch, running into the side of your car. That's kind of an accident if you're doing everything right. But almost every crash I've worked in 31 years has been preventable.
Wow. Now, let's talk about media outreach and the public education fitting into the overall traffic safety strategy. We talked a little bit about the class. Media outreach, this is the stuff that we're doing right here. Mm-hmm. This is a way to educate just as much as a way to inform.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that is our overall, we've talked about that many times on here, how we would rather educate before anything and get voluntary compliance. We talked about the beginning of this show. We've talked about it many times on this show. And so getting people to understand, you know, the importance of the responsibility they have when operating a motor vehicle and having them, you know, like you said, it's not a right, it's a privilege, and don't take it for granted because it can be taken away. And so it's very important because we want to make sure that people are traveling and to and from work, to and from school, to and from social events in a safe manner, and that they get to and from those locations safely.
Yeah.
And that's our overall purpose. And we will continue to place a high priority on that. And it's, you know, we would be happy if we weren't able to make any traffic stops. Like everybody did everything exactly right every day of the week. We would be happy. We'd be bored, but we'd be happy because that means that the chances of somebody getting hurt or getting in a crash have gone way down.
Captain, as you looked at the information over the past year and you compiled it, was there anything that stuck out to you for the 2025 year? Anything that caught you off guard or maybe surprised you a little?
Only how consistent everything is from year to year. For instance, for 2025, out of all the traffic stops, 67% of the citations, people who received citations, were male, 88% were white, 4% were Hispanic or Latino, 3% were Native American, 1% was Asian, and 2% were unknown or below the 1% threshold. That's the exact same numbers as the year before.
Wow.
Give or take a tenth or a 100th of a percentage. So it just shows that that's something we do look at because, of course, in 2026, we're sensitive to profiling and making sure everyone gets equal treatment. That tells me we generally are. We're a fairly homogenous population, but still it's important to treat everyone the same way and to the objective standards. But yeah, almost everything from year to year is it generally stays the same here.
That is kind of surprising, isn't it? To see the consistency, as you said, year after year after year. We may talk about it once a year, but you really have to sit with this information so you get to see that.
And we issued 1,717 traffic citations overall for the year. So once again, that's roughly a third of the numbers numbers we talked about earlier. And it's just we're lucky, but what Chief said, our goal is to have zero crime, period. Obviously, a speeding ticket's not a crime, but we'd love to not to have to issue any citations or even make any traffic stops.
Mm-hmm. Chief, what about you? As you got the information, you looked through it, anything stand out?
I just right along with the captain said, you know, it's showing that we are playing equal, you know, the equal standards to our enforcement. It's been consistent. That speaks volumes for how we are approaching it as a cultural from the Sheridan Police Department, and our officers, regardless of how long they've been here, understand it, and the purpose and the reasons and the why we do the things that we do, and they understand the importance of applying those consistent standards. It makes me very proud.
I was going to say it's that character-driven hiring. The right people for the job. Chief, Captain, thank you both so much for coming in this morning.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Floyd.
I really have a great time talking about these numbers and law enforcement with you guys. I learn a lot. Thanks. All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Some banks answer to shareholders.
First Federal Bank and Trust answers to the community.
Because as a mutual bank, everyone benefits. Profits stay local.
Supporting nonprofits and community programs with decades of local roots and modern online and mobile banking that fits your life.
More than a bank.
A mutual commitment.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
I'm here with Candace Kindred from Teriyaki Madness. Long days are cold and dinner decisions feel harder than they should.
Tommy, hi. So warm things up with Teriyaki Madness. Come check out our best-selling orange chicken tossed hot in the wok and served over warm noodles. And if you want more heat, make it spicy. It's real made-to-order comfort food that warms you from the inside out.
And you don't even have to go out in the cold.
Now with Mad Dash, order on the Teriyaki Madness app, select Mad Dash, and pull up front. We'll run the food right out to your car. Stay warm and keep those kids buckled.
Turn up the heat with Teriyaki Madness.
Moss Holders Design Center knows one mattress does not fit everyone. That's why Moss Holders carries 21 different Serta mattresses. From super soft to incredibly firm, it's important you find the mattress that best fits your body and your sleep style. Moss Holders offers eye comfort and eye comfort hybrids, which conform to your body with high-quality memory foam, but don't sleep hot. Serta's perfect sleepers provide amazing support without breaking the budget. Moss Holders is also your source for new sheets, pillows, and adjustable bases. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
Looking for a fun night out for a great cause? Join the Advocacy and Resource Center for the 9th Annual Love Shouldn't Hurt fundraiser featuring the High Energy Fun Pianos, February 13th at 6 p.m. at the Calif Shrine. For only $75 per person, enjoy music, laughter, and an unforgettable event while supporting survivors of violence in our community. Love shouldn't hurt. Your support makes a difference. For questions, call 307-672-7471.
Friday, February 6th at 7 p.m., the YO Theater presents Dance Theater Excursions, Salt Lake City's renowned repertory dance theater. Excursions showcases the company's versatility, athleticism, and artistic depth. Their works range from bold contemporary pieces to elegant modern classics, pushing the boundaries of movement and meaning. Experience the power and poetry of the human body in motion. Get your tickets for Excursions at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
There is no place like Laramie.
C-O-W-B-O-Y-S, Cowboys!
Cowboys, Cowboys, Cowboys.
We are Wyoming Tough.
Like every night in the Mountain West is a dogfight, and the way we play is going to be a dogfight.
Belich high left for three. Looks good. Is good.
Go Wyoming.
It's Belich. He'll just spot up for three. Good.
Your home for Wyoming basketball.
Tune into Wyoming Cowboy basketball all season long on 1410 AM and 106.9 FM KWYO.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For a second part this morning, we are joined by the Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir. How are things in Johnson County?
Floyd, it is beautiful here, as long as you didn't want to take your snow machine or your ice skates out.
I know. I had my doors open last night. Just letting some air in, sir. It's been a weekend, it's been a winter season. How do you feel about the weather this year as somebody who is very involved in the agricultural community and a producer yourself?
Well, like everybody, I think we're hoping that we're going to have a late run of snow. Obviously that makes it a little dangerous as folks are starting to get into calving and lambing season, and we've got shearers actually that are over here right now working on some small flocks. So you worry about those late storms, but we've got to have the moisture. We can't rely on the adage that, oh, it'll just be fine if it rains in April and May. We need that snowpack in the Bighorn's mouth. So we still have a little bit of time, but it's not looking good.
You know, I think it was you who brought up the dangers of a really bad fire season when we don't get snow like this. Is that on your mind?
It really is. You know, between some of the fuel load in areas that haven't burned, that's up, that maybe didn't get grazed off yet, do that. Obviously, the prevalence of cheatgrass and some of these other non-native species that are more likely to burn, it really and it burns at a higher intensity, so it's very concerning.
Sir, I always get concerned during the lightning storms. It's one of those beautiful things that happens, but one missed strike, and we could end up, you know, in a bad situation. Switching gears on you, something I wanted to talk to you about for a while: the upcoming budget session. Outside of the budget, are there any bills or issues that you are really watching this year? And if so, why?
Boy, big bill for our veterans, big bill for this area is in the construction bill for the state of Wyoming. It's finally the renovations of the domiciliary up at the Veterans Home. Purely because they keep putting off doing the project. This has been the number one project for the state of Wyoming for several years, and they're getting eaten up in inflationary costs, and what was a $50 million project is now looking at $80 million. So we're very, very hopeful we can get that across the finish line. We can provide the men and women who were up there with the facility that they deserve. It's little things like being able to have your own bathroom, being able to have an elevator that's reliable. You know, areas in the building that were put together in the 40s that just don't meet the electrical and technical, whether it's Wi-Fi and these other things that we find so common that you just don't have in a building of that age. So if we can give those guys that quality of life by giving them the facility they deserve.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that, sir. You know, I feel something that you and I have talked about multiple times, and each year we both keep our fingers crossed. Those veterans out there deserve their dignity. And
they really do.
It's up to us, folks, to really make this happen. Now, let's talk about some key dates, sir. Some folks might be jumping online now in anticipation, looking at the agenda, looking at the schedule. Can you explain why the bill draft deadline
on February 12th is such a critical turning point for shaping what counties can realistically expect to see in that final budget?
Well, as most people understand, Floyd, hopefully, that this is a budget session. For so anything outside of the budget to be even considered during the session, it's got to overcome that two-thirds majority introductory vote. But because you have such a condensed schedule, which actually I think is kind of a brilliant thing, because it forces them to get to work and not waste time on things that are not pertinent or relevant. So you start to hit those hard deadlines. So we look every day to see which new bills are getting introduced in this session, and lawmakers are limited on the number of bills they can bring in a legislative session. I believe it's three on the Senate side and about five or six on the House side. So we're waiting to see those bills get introduced. But the later you introduce those in the session, you condense the calendar even tighter. So it really gets hard to meet those deadlines, because you got to move those bills through the process so that they have time to get done, arrive on the governor's desk, so he's got the opportunity to review them, decide whether or not he's going to veto those. If he vetoes them, you got to make sure you've saved enough time in the schedule so that the House and the Senate can have a vote to override those vetoes. And so it's real critical that that date comes up in that second week of the session really, really quickly. And you got to introduce those bills. They need to go to committees. Sometimes if there's an appropriation attached to it, then it's going to get re-referred to the Appropriations Committee, so that adds more time for those committees to consider a bill, and which makes it really hard sometimes to track things. We might have only 24 hours notice when one of those bills that is so impactful to our community is going to be up in a committee. So we have to be real vigilant about watching what's going on. Your city council, your commissioners, all of your elected officials will be down for that first week of the session to work with the legislature on bills that impact us. But you get through the first week, and then that's really when the sausage starts to grind, and you'll see things either dying quickly. And that also is then typically when the legislature will put most of their work in each respective chamber, so they can give themselves some time to get into a conference committee to sort out those differences on the budgets. And trust me, there's going to be big differences between the House and Senate as people start to contemplate things like the University of Wyoming, the Wyoming Business Council, and also the direct distribution that comes back to local government.
Let's touch on that direct distribution. Have you heard any rumblings through the vines about that being affected in any way this year?
So what, at this point in the process, we're looking at is $105 million that gets worked through a formula. That is less money than has gone through that formula in the past. They have at least hopefully found a pay for that, and that's redirecting a portion of the 4% of sales tax that the state holds back would be used to flow to fund that. Folks will remember that this direct distribution was put in place when sales tax was removed from groceries. It was supposed to keep communities whole. It was a pledge by the legislature that understood that you have limited ways to raise local revenue to pay for programs. And this was supposed to be the olive branch. And unfortunately, that 105 doesn't keep up with inflation, and certainly doesn't keep up with the realities of what it costs to put in a mile of road or a new water line.
Which seemed to just be increasing exponentially all over. Since we're talking about it, what are your feelings on the Joint Appropriations Committee voting to shut down the Wyoming Business Council?
Business Council has flaws, but what it's certainly in our area we have benefited from is technical assistance on potential projects that are looking at coming into the area of information that we just don't have. And so we're able to refer those folks to this business council and hopefully get their questions answered. I don't think that we should have an unlimited slush fund of giveaway. But what I do think that the state has to have that gateway clearinghouse of this is who provides power in this area. This is the internet provider. This is how far you are away from natural gas pipeline. Technical pieces of information, some of which are actually considered part of national security because it's critical infrastructure. That's information that your local planner and your maybe your local economic development group just doesn't have. So if we don't have a place to send the people that are interested in either coming into your community or expanding their existing business, then where do they get the information? They're going to get it from other states, and they're going to head there. You know, we already have the lowest business taxes. We don't have any corporate income tax, low property taxes. You know, if you wanted to really look at in things that are blocking business from expanding, we need to look at the cost of electricity and other things that adds undue costs, whether you're a light manufacturer or some of these other things. But I don't think this is the way to, if you're concerned about how the state has handled economic development, I don't think this is the appropriate way. I think they should be looking more at a package of reforms and restructures rather than saying, nope, we're going to throw our hands up. We're going to let every state around us compete for opportunity because they all have some version of a business council.
That's right. And, you know, it's to me, it seems like a baby with the bathwater situation.
Well, and you know, when there have been fundamental reforms to things, and it's usually done through a standalone bill. It's usually not done legislating through the budget. So it was just an interesting departure. But I think this is a good conversation that we're having about, are there things that we like that the business council does? Are there things that we don't? This is a conversation that's been a long time coming. So I do think that hopefully we're going to get out of this in a situation where the state's in a better place. We have a better, more focused effort on what we can do to make sure this is a place that young people want to stay, that if you have a business, your business can grow. Or if you decide you want to relocate here or start something new that's never been invented, that this is the place you want to come.
Absolutely. And I think that's, in my opinion, that's very important. Keeping our youth here, you know, working for the Cowboy State, working together within the communities that they grew up in. And it always saddens me to see them go. excuse me. Now, sir, you will be heading to the Capitol. What's on your agenda during the visit?
Well, we are so fortunate in this corner of the state that we have an incredible state senator. We got an incredible representative who want our local input. So I'm looking forward to having those conversations with Barry and Marilyn as bills come up that impact our local government. And other aspects of the state's travel and tourism economy, hopefully is going to be a little contentious at times, but hopefully it's a productive session that people can be proud of what their legislators do and that they are actually representing all of the state and not just special interests.
Understood and heard completely on that one. Excuse me. Now, recently, and I'm going to switch gears on you one last time. I am running out of time with you, but this is something that I wanted to discuss with you. Johnson County School District Number 1 Board of Trustees voted to begin the process of moving from a 9 to a 7 board member board. I've only got 2 minutes left, sir. Why was this decision made?
They're, I think, the largest or one of the largest school boards in the state. And this goes back actually when the district in KC was merged with the district on the north half of the county. And so where this gets interesting is that we're going to have to convene a board that's in state statute that really doesn't get convened very often. So we have to convene the school district boundary board. And so this will consist of the county assessor, the county treasurer, and your county commissioners, and we will either approve this request from the school board or deny it. And they've got to also work with the State Board of Education on this. But one of those arcane things back in state statutes that we had to go back and research to see what you do when you want to make these kind of changes. So a little bit of a history lesson for us, and also a good example of how democracy works.
It's really interesting. Sometimes something comes along where we got to dig out the scrolls in a way and see what
it really is.
What we got to get done to get done. Now, one last question before I let you go, sir. Will this affect anything in the long run that you can see?
You know, I don't believe so, Floyd, and certainly in discussions with member of the board and also Superintendent Oski. The hope is that, you know, they have struggled for years to get people to run for the, all of those 9 seats. So if you condense it to 7, hopefully we can have good quality folks. This is an incredible board that does thankless work to educate our kids and make sure that our teachers are getting fairly compensated, and that our kids are proficient, that the facilities they have are top-notch. So really one of those very, very important boards.
All right, sir. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. It is always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you.
Good talk, Floyd. Have a great day.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Here's what makes First Federal Bank and Trust different.
No shareholders, just shared values and profits that are reinvested locally, supporting nonprofits to help our community thrive.
Mutual means more for our communities.
With years of trusted local service and modern banking tools that make life easier, mutual means more.
First Federal Bank and Trust, banking with shared values. Member FDIC.
Oh man, thank you for bringing the food.
No worries. I got a hold of Big Horny and grabbed everything.
Oh, you called who?
Big Horny. Famous wings. Shrimp cocktail. House-made chips and dips to die for. Oh, and Hetty's pizzas.
You mean the Big Horn Y.
Wow, you have more to bring in? Let me help.
You know it, girl.
Beer, wine, and mixers. This is the big game. Thanks to Big Horny, we're doing it right.
That's Big Horn Y. Unfortunate Facebook address. Unforgettable food.
Looking for a fun night out for a great cause? Join the Advocacy and Resource Center for the 9th Annual Love Shouldn't Hurt fundraiser featuring the High Energy Fun Pianos. February 13th at 6 p.m. at the Caliph Shrine. For only $75 per person, enjoy music, laughter, and an unforgettable event while supporting survivors of violence in our community. Love shouldn't hurt. Your support makes a difference. For questions, call 307-672-7471.
Moss Holders Design Center knows one mattress does not fit everyone. That's why Moss Holders carries 21 different Serta mattresses. From super soft to incredibly firm, it's important you find the mattress that best fits your body and your sleep style. Moss Holders offers eye comfort and eye comfort hybrids, which conform to your body with high quality memory foam, but don't sleep hot. Serta's perfect sleepers provide amazing support without breaking the budget. Moss Holders is also your source for new sheets, pillows, and adjustable bases. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
Billings to Buffalo. This is the News Talk Station, FM 103.9 and 930 AM KROE. KROE.